The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by Eno, the Capital One assistant. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain podcast on ESPN Radio.
When did the people that seemingly like sports the least get put in charge of every acceptable opinion and return date and decision and word written and word spoken about sports? When did people in charge get so removed from actual fans that they have no idea what they sound like? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. Coming up in this hour, we'll talk to ESPN college football reporter and host Laura Rutledge about the fact that college football might return, but without fans in the stands. What does that mean for the bottom line? What kind of revenue loss would that be, and what would that mean for college athletics? And a massive bit of news when it comes to sports, sports radio, sports audio, and media in general. Joe Rogan moves to Spotify, and I find that story eminently fascinating. When you combine it with the drama at Barstool Sports over the Call Her Daddy podcast, we find an industry at a crossroads. We'll talk about all that coming up in this hour of the Will Cain Show. Plus, we need to revisit exactly what Nuno meant when he kept asking Darlington, what D? I still don't know what he meant by D. I still don't know why he asked it that way, but I know that when someone says D, we all run to places that don't end with Darlington. Again, that's all coming up a little bit later here on the Will Cain Show. You know, there's a little bit of drama going on. It always happens on Twitter. It always happens online, where people have accused sports reporters or sports writers of not wanting sports to come back. And that has offended greatly some of those whose jobs depend upon the idea of sports coming back. I don't intend to join that debate. I don't know the motivations from various people out there in the sports media, your blue check marks, your Praetorian guard of acceptable thought when it comes to sports. But I do wonder where they lost so much touch with the world. I was reading this morning a column up on New York Magazine by Will Leach. Will Leach is a sports writing figure. He was one of the founders of Deadspin, and he has, I guess, graduated on to writing for more mainstream publications like New York Magazine. And Leach wrote the following couple of paragraphs I found important to address, mostly because they are so incredibly mystifying and so incredibly enlightening in what they reveal about the mindset of those who tell us what is and is not smart, what is and is not acceptable, what is and is not the right way to think about sports. This is what Leach wrote in New York Magazine. He said, "Our current national strategy about when sports returns appears to have evolved into a Sweden, but cross your fingers, non-plan. And it's still too early in the reopening to discern the effects of states like Georgia, Florida, and Colorado." Of course, it's too early because all indications are things are going well in Florida and Georgia, who've elected to come back quickly, and some of the places where sport seems to be returning the most readily. I agree. What do we know about coronavirus? We never fully know everything. Information seems to change on a daily basis, so who can proclaim Georgia or Florida a success yet? But one can call balls and strikes and say, it's a success right now. You don't have to check out and go, well, we'll see, because it doesn't fit your narrative, because it doesn't fit what you'd like. You just didn't do that a month ago, when various sports figures like Peter King were crushing Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida for his response to this. Certainly didn't sit on the sideline on that one. So why sit out now when it's plainly obvious it's going well? Of course, that's not a permanent condition, so we'll see how it goes in the future. By the way, this column's headline, its title is, "It's probably not safe for sports to come back, but that may not matter." Leach is laying out that really what we should be doing is waiting. But waiting for what? Well, it seems to me waiting for two things in his estimation. Complete and utter risk-less existence and the permission of John Oliver. Because this is how he goes on. On Sunday evening, John Oliver, who, by the way, is a talk show host, on HBO, talk show hosts, are new lights of enlightenment across the media landscape. At least that's how they would have you believe. Everybody from Fallon to Kimmel to Colbert to Oliver. These are the true leaders of our society, they would have you believe. John Oliver argued that it's too soon for sports to come back. He may very well be right, writes Leach. But it shouldn't be surprising to learn that sports leagues are listening to governors, their bottom line, and yes, Donald Trump, before they're listening to John Oliver. And he writes that as though it's a problem. As though the right decision is to defer decision-making to comedians. But mind you now, comedians who share our opinions, not those pesky comedians that veer from the acceptable groupthink within media chambers, comedians who say what we think but do it in funnier words. Those are the guys we really like. That's when our endorphins really set off. That's when the serotonin gets flowing and our hands start rubbing together. When somebody says what I think, but they do it in a more caustic, sarcastic, and laugh track filled fashion. Those should be our real leaders. In the end, maybe we should just do away with democratically elected officials. Maybe we should do away with this whole federalism concept. Georgia, Florida making their own decisions. Sports media doesn't like your decision. Didn't you hear what Colbert said on Late Night? Maybe that's how we should begin to execute our society's decision-making in the future. Wait until the punchline at 11:30. Leach goes on, and this is the line that really got my attention for this entire article. The most ethical, moral thing might be to hold off until things are entirely safe. What does that mean? When are things entirely safe? When is life entirely safe? When is the coronavirus going to be entirely behind us? When did that become the goal? Because it never was. And this is why people ask questions about your motives. Dave Portnoy, the founder of Barstool Sports, made a viral video about a week ago. It was not just viral, it was eloquent. It was right on. It was spot on. About when did the idea change from bend the curve to find a cure? Everybody, and mind you, not sports talking heads like me, but epidemiologists and those in charge of our national decision making, which impacts when sports returns, like Dr. Anthony Fauci, had said the goal in this entire quarantine and stay-at-home orders was to bend the curve, to allow for hospitals to be able to deal with the number of people who get sick. It was never to accomplish a 0% infection rate. It was never to get to this impossible to define, completely safe, quote-unquote, status that Leach talks about. I don't understand exactly how that is the goal. I don't think it ever was the goal. I don't understand how this is what's supposed to be smart in sports media. I don't think it ever was smart. I think it's just what we were told over and over among the echo chamber of agreement of everyone else in sports media. And I don't think this is immoral. I don't think it ever was a moral proposition. If it were, you would understand that people losing their jobs by the millions because of a forced shutdown also has moral implications. Do you know anyone who's been furloughed? Do you know anyone who's lost their job? Because I do. Weeks and weeks on end. Months and months on end. Suffering. How do you provide for your family? How do you make a living? That's a moral question as much as any question about public safety. But yet, it's not factored in at all. The real life, the real opinions, the real desires of real people out there are totally beneath the idea that there is a moral proposition that is usually granted to us and handed to us by the likes of John Oliver and other comedians who share the mainstream opinions. Well, now that is what we're told should define our morality. What I might suggest is this. I don't grant anyone bad motivations for their opinions in a very trying crisis. I also don't grant you the premise that you are right. But what I will question is your ability to see the impact on everyone in this equation. Not just through public health, but through the economy. Not just through the coronavirus, but through their jobs. And it leaves me wondering, why is it that sports media is almost universally commandeered by a group of people who proclaim themselves to be smart, who proclaim themselves to be moral, and proclaim themselves, if not in their words and their actions, above everyone else, and are totally out of touch with most of us who don't just want, but need a return to normalcy, which includes, yes, a return of sports. That's some of my thoughts. Coming up, Laura Rutledge is going to tell us what it means if college football comes back but loses 75% of its revenue. What's it mean for the rest of collegiate sports? What does it mean for the rest of things on campus? That's coming up on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
I'm increasingly optimistic, maybe it's just inevitable, that college sports will return, college football will return in 2020. But I don't know that it will happen with fans. And so what does that mean for the future of not just college football, but for collegiate sports? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. To help figure that out, we got the host of, one of the hosts of Get Up and First Take from time to time. She's our college football reporter. It's Laura Rutledge on our phone lines. What's up, Laura?
What's up, Will? How are you?
I'm good. So I was playing some of your sound earlier, and you were talking about how much the in-game experience, in-game revenue, accounts for when it comes to college football. I couldn't believe the numbers. You were like, 75-80% is what you said. Only 25% coming from TV. I would have guessed it was higher for TV. That's huge, Laura. Like, if they're giving up 75% of their revenue, I have no idea the implications of that. Like, what is the fallout? What does that mean for not just football, but every sport on campus?
It's crazy. Believe me, I was shocked by those numbers as well. And look, 25%, that's for a big-time Power 5 program. Some of the numbers are even less from a TV revenue standpoint for some of these middle-of-the-road and smaller programs, because if you think about it, they may not be as interesting for people who are watching from home, and they may not have as many of those opportunities to be on big time television. And so when it comes to the NFL, 15% of their revenue, somewhere around 15-16%, comes from the fans. The rest comes from TV money and other things. Totally different in college football. And in most cases, 70-80% of their revenue is coming from fans who enter stadiums and pack these stadiums, as well as those donors who buy those expensive boxes that people like me don't know much about, but they are a big part of all of this. And I think what may be lost in translation here is just how much of college football and then other sports are fueled by these donors that are going to say, well, wait a second, I'm not sure if I want to give my big, massive donation if I'm not even going to a game this year because the games are happening without fans. That's going to be really key as this all continues to develop. And so I think initially there was a reticence to even discuss games without fans because many of the coaches said, well, how is it going to be safe for my players to be on the field if it's not safe for fans to be in the stadium? That's been a discussion point, and it's an important one, obviously. But what is maybe the larger and more important discussion point is how does a university survive from a financial standpoint without that revenue that's generated by fans? And I do believe that some football obviously is going to be better than none. So if they think that the only way to play football is maybe without fans or maybe with stadiums that are not at capacity, which those models are being thrown around daily amongst these decision makers, that's better than nothing, but it's not sustainable long term. So it certainly would be only a short term fix. And it really is important for not only the viability of the other sports at these universities, but for the bottom line at these universities throughout the country.
Yeah, so what you're saying is not just the women's gymnastic team or the men's tennis team that could be under threat with that revenue loss, But you're saying the university itself could be under threat of going under.
Yes, and I don't know that people realize, too, how oftentimes, you know, a library that is constructed on campus is a result of money that was generated by the football program. And look, this is sometimes arbitrary. It just depends on how any particular university wants to allocate their funds. But there is a lot of it that happens that way and has continued to happen that way. And so it's not only that football oftentimes is the only sport that actually profits. You know, let's just take Alabama, for instance. Last season in 2019, $25 million was the profit of the football program, and everything else took a $22 million loss. So we're talking about that is the only way to continue to allow these sports to carry on. And then, like we just talked about, you know, even just the viability of the university as well. So I think it gets dicey as you talk about all this, too, because these players are student athletes, or at least supposed student athletes. And so they're not being paid. They're not being compensated. But yet their performance and their ability to play and their presence on these fields and on television and beyond in front of these fans, that is what generates this revenue. And that's where things get so much dicier at the college football level and the college football standpoint and all of this, because it's not like these pro sports where they can just say, hey, look, you're getting paid, you know, you're going to assume a certain amount of risk here and we're going to get this thing going. It's not the same for college football players that are still considered amateurs.
Laura Rutledge here on the Will Cain Show. Laura, I've been doing these sort of long-form podcasts, long-form conversations, and one of the guys or groups of guys that I've been talking to is college football coaches. I've talked to Tom Herman. I've talked to David Shaw. I have some more lined up, but I just got done talking to David Shaw earlier today. I'm going to post that tomorrow on the Will Cain
Show. He's fascinating, by the way. So good, right?
Knocked my socks off. And Nuno and everybody on the show were like, wow, he is an impressive dude. Well, but I asked him, I think he's in a unique position because while I feel good about college football returning, the state of California is the one state I'm not sure about when it comes to college football. That's because Cal State system has already said no students on campus. So that raises my eyebrows. I asked him about that. And by the way, I expanded the question about the Pac-12 in general and the power of the Pac-12 in the Power 5 conferences. And is it at threat of falling behind or losing ground or whatever it may be? And of course, David Shaw, though, he was confident in about the Pac-12 and that there would be football coming back. But it seems to me there's an increasing conversation that the Pac-12 may be in a different situation than everyone else. Do you disagree with that?
I think right now it's just too early to know. And I think one of the reasons why the Pac-12 has come into question here is because of those early season games that are out of conference. So we're talking about that USC-Alabama game supposed to open the season. We're talking about Oregon taking on Ohio State in the second week of the season. Those are the games that I think are maybe in question, although both sides of the leadership say that they're not, but which is kind of what they have to say, right? And that's where I think people started to wonder about the Pac-12. You mentioned the Cal State system saying that they're not going to have students on campus. There is still many opportunities for loopholes here, and I think that's where this could get really fascinating. I've talked to many decision makers that say, and some of these even are affiliated with the Pac-12, that you could have students still technically in school by taking online classes, even if they're not on campus. And that becomes incredibly dicey for so many reasons, mainly the one that I mentioned about them still being classified as amateurs and the NCAA trying to hold on to any sliver of power that they might have left here. And this could really snowball into a much bigger issue. So maybe we see the Pac-12 come back and play on time or close to on time or kind of in line with the rest of the country, but maybe they're having their student athletes take classes online, which happens a lot anyway. I mean, Joe Burrow, for instance, took all of his classes online that final semester at LSU. That's just one example, and I think that happens more often than people even realize. But it just gets so incredibly complicated, and I think this is going to continue to be the case. What I would say, too, that's still a model that's out there, and many people balk at this, and I get why, but I promise you it's being discussed by major Power 5 conferences and by programs, is a spring model of college football. And it would allow to potentially get most of a season in with full capacity stadiums, potentially. Now, look, who knows what our country is like at that point, right? But if things are that way to where they felt more comfortable with that because you've gone through an entire calendar year of coronavirus, you've seen what potential potentially could happen. You've maybe avoided or at least mitigated what many people think could be a resurgence in the colder months. All of these things, they could be solved potentially by pushing the season that far back. And it
would
create
all... Really quick, Laura, because I'm up against commercial break. So,
yeah.
And this is probably impossible for you to answer, though, but I have to ask it. Do you think the sense you get from college administrators, university presidents, and coaches is if they had to choose between a fall schedule with no fans or a spring schedule with fans in the stadium, which would they choose?
I think they would choose the spring schedule with fans. If they knew that they could get the full season off or at least close to it and they could get their full profit in a calendar year, I think the academic school year, I think that would be more attractive to them than even playing in the fall.
Wow. Wow. And then that leaves a whole host of questions about the combine, about the draft, about
guys
turning pro.
Crazy.
Yeah. Laura Rutledge here on the Will Cain Show. Really good conversation, Laura. Thanks for telling us all that.
Yes, thank you guys.
Okay, take care. Laura Rutledge here on the Will Cain Show. All right, coming up, I think it's a fascinating bit of news in media and sports today. It's Joe Rogan and it's Barstool Sports, and it's what's going on with their podcast. We'll talk about that next on the Will Cain Show.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Joe Rogan just signed like a $100 million deal. And apparently Barstool's had a falling out drama with its biggest podcast, at least biggest podcast right now. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, homes, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. I find those two stories fascinating, and I find them actually incredibly important in the world of sports media. I'm going to be talking about that in just a moment on the Will Cain Show, but I sat down with Marcus Spears, ESPN football analyst, one-time Dallas Cowboy, one-time LSU Tiger, about his life, his career, his interactions with Bill Parcells, and I asked him a question about whether or not he hit a level where he realized this is different. And I'm not trying to make us sound the same, but I did. I think my question's in here, so I don't want to, you know, repeat myself. But I thought it was interesting what Marcus told me about when you are elite. And look, Marcus was, and not just in football. Big-time basketball player, big-time tight end before becoming a first-round draft pick on defense in the NFL. Did he ever hit a level where it was like, well, those dudes are different? And he did, but he said it was the very, very top. Listen to this. It was within my first practice or two, Marcus. I'm like, oh, no, there's not two groups. It's one group. The fast guys are strong and the big guys are fast, and I'm just not either. That's middle of what I was saying, so I'm not repeating myself. What I was saying to him is I'm not comparing my collegiate water polo career to your elite athleticism, but I do know this, that when I got to the water polo deck, I played at Pepperdine. It's top 10 program in the country, and I was a walk-on, but I was like, okay, there's the fast guys, the skinny guys, they're fast like me. Here's the big strong guys, they're 250, they're 250 pounds, they're over there. And it only took me one practice to realize, no, there's not two groups, it's one. They're all strong, they're all fast. The 250-pounders were all fast, faster than me. And I realized this is what Division I athlete was. So then I asked Marcus, did he ever hit that level? Go ahead. It was within my first practice or two, Marcus. I'm like, oh no, there's not two groups, it's one group. The fast guys are strong and the big guys are fast, and I'm just not either of these two. Now that was my experience, okay? What I'm curious about you is, did you ever hit another level where you were like, oh, this is different? You mentioned Larry Allen. What I learned that first practice or two is what a Division I athlete was, right? And a lot of those guys went on to be Olympians. And I'm like, this is different. You mentioned that practice against Larry Allen. As an elite basketball player, an elite offensive tight end who got switched defensive end, was a first-round draft pick, did you ever hit a guy or hit a level where you're like, oh, this just changed big time?
Well, L.A., Larry Allen, who you just that was different. But that's Hall of Fame. That's great as ever, Will. And to be honest with you, and not to sound boastful or anything, outside of Larry Allen and probably Jonathan Ogden, Willie Rofe, and noticed, that's three Hall of Famers I just mentioned. Everybody else, I felt like at some point I'd be on that level or be able to play and compete from an athletic standpoint and just learning the game and being a veteran. But those three guys, it felt like it was no way to get to that level. And I guess that's the difference. I saw that. I saw D. Ware develop into being that guy for a lot of guys. Like, there's no way I'm going to get to that level. When T.O. came to Dallas, you saw what the level looked like of a Hall of Fame. So, look, man, these dudes with these gold jackets, you got to realize they better than the best.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the NFL is the best, or they were the best at some point. Or they were one of the best or one of the elite. If you playing in the league, there is something elite about you. It's not just by happenstance that you become a good player or a starter for a number of years in the NFL, unless you bring in some kind of quality of high level eliteness. And when you have guys that supersede that, and you start getting the Hall of Fame, greatest of all time, there's a significant difference in those guys. And for me, that was Larry Allen. My first couple practices against Larry Allen, and I don't think I've ever told anybody this, a couple times walking off the field, I thought to myself, my own inner voice was like, I can't play this game if it's like this every Sunday. Like, there's no way I'm going to develop and become what I need to become if every guy I play like this against, every guy I play against is like this. And, you know, I think that's a point of doubt that every athlete has at some point when you play against somebody like that. But then something in you, man, just won't allow you to accept that. So it was just an everyday, how do I get better? How do I work around it? And I'll say out of the 1,000 times that I went against Larry Allen, I probably beat him like 10, but I'm holding on to them, son of a gun.
It's Marcus Pierce talking about what it's like when you see the Hall of Fame level of player. Those gold jackets, they don't just give out. And he's telling you, among the elite athletes, among the best of the best, those guys stand out to their peers. I believe him. I bet that level was different. I went on to talk to Marcus Pierce about other stuff. He said, is every practice going to be like this after going up against Larry Allen? He also talked about his love of hunting. And he talked about who the hardest guy he ever tried to tackle was. Give you a hint. It's another Hall of Famer. I'll give you some of that sound. Plus, you can go check out the whole podcast on the Will Cain Show feed. Before I go to I want to hear from Jason. Let's take a quick break. I want to hear from Jason, Alabama. Then I want to talk about Joe Rogan. That's all coming up on the Will Cain Show.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Feel the Cain. Will Cain.
All right, so my list is top five 90s frontmen. Parentheses, who are no longer living.
Okay.
Eddie Vedder, Billy Corgan, these guys are not applicable. That's not a word.
They're not what?
Never mind.
No. Somebody grab that.
Somebody grab that, please. Damn it.
Big news in the world of media and sports media. Coming up just a minute here on the Will Cain Show. But Jason Alabama has been on hold for a while, and he has an interesting question. One that I'm not sure I have the answer to. Go ahead, Jason. What's your question?
I'm sure you have the answer to it, Cain. And it's not just you. I want the whole gang, man. I want Bubba. I want them all to answer it. I have an answer to the question. If you guys get it, I swear to God, I'm looking for bugs around my house. So I think you're bugging it. But the question is, I know you guys have one hell of a motley crew, but if you guys are going somewhere like the, you know, like we have the documentaries with Jordan and bullying and all that crap, you know, quote unquote bullying. But if someone's going to mess with you, if you have one NFL player have your back, currently playing in today's game, who would it be?
One NFL player currently playing who's the bodyguard in our entourage. All right,
exactly.
Let's keep Jason. Keep him around here because we've got to find out if we say the name that he has.
There's no way unless you done bug me. But I know I've got a couple written down that are great.
Hold on. You guys, I need to get the juices flowing here. Bubba, Mike,
yeah, I'm trying to think here. I don't know. I mean, all
yeah,
the time,
I know. I have,
some
I have
time here.
No, I there's one in particular. Actually,
there's
I would hope
one.
There'd be two.
Got, the one that's got to be Nuno's got one. I guarantee you.
It's one for me.
Very
it's
excited.
For me. It's the Pouncey, the one that plays for the Steelers.
Oh, that's one of them. That's one
that's
of them.
A good yeah. one.
Or either one of them. Either
yeah,
one of them.
Right either one of them. But I'm going to take that one.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take that one. Yeah, that'd be one. Correct.
I think generally you want defensive linemen, though, right? Or I don't know.
I don't know. No. Offensive players, their offensive linemen are ridiculous for their protection of their quarterback. That's why
yeah,
they get the big toys.
Protective instincts. Mike, hey, come on. You got to have somebody here. By the way, are you the current bodyguard for this crew, Mike? I don't even know. Like,
I mean,
if we get into a bar brawl, are you the guy we're counting on?
I mean, listen, I'm probably that guy. Nobody wants to fight me.
Actually,
we're probably getting into bar brawl because of Mike. So.
No,
well,
I don't think so.
Hey,
I don't think if we get into a fight, I don't think Mike's the first one starting it. I think it's Pat. I think, Will, you're high up there.
I think I am, too.
But unlike Pat, I don't think you run away.
I'm the guy who stands behind you, Will, when you're starting it, just to make it, like, listen, I'm going to have to get involved. Like, let's just please walk away. I don't want to have to do this.
I could be a punk. I could definitely be a punk.
That is awesome.
Yeah. It's me or Pat that's definitely causing the problems, but we're not backing it up. And that's where Mike A comes in. And this
Taylor
NFL
Lewan.
Guy. Taylor Lewan.
Come on, Kane. Your country strong, man. Come on.
Country strong. Who are you leading me towards? I don't know. I need a multiple choice. Give me your multiple choice. You had some names, Jason. Give me a multiple choice.
I'm not gonna let you slide, Kane. No, man. This is
so
no.
Aggressive.
No.
I feel like
no.
We're about to
Ben DiNucci.
Come on, man.
Kyle Juszczyk.
Just think of the toughest people that you would think of, or the largest people. See, I've got it. I didn't have to do much studying. I just was listening to actually a show that wasn't y'all's. Earlier this morning before I had to go into my restaurant and
restaurant?
I never mentioned them. So I was like,
You got a restaurant?
Yeah, yeah.
How you doing? You doing all right?
We're doing good. We're covering small business. Well, you know, yeah, I know you know, I mean, it's one reason why I list your show, man. I appreciate everything you say about us and all stuff, but I'm not getting into all that stuff.
I hear you. I wish you the best. What are we listening to? Whose topic
yeah,
is this? Levitards?
Appreciate it.
Whose topic is this? We're stealing. Whose is it? Levitard?
Pro Football Talk.
Florio? Good Lord.
The Sims. Yeah, I know. No, they don't take calls, but I was like just screaming at TV. It's like they were giving like – they did get Pouncy, and they did get the other one I've got here listed.
Okay, country strong, big –
I said, you got to be country strong because you're from Texas, man. You got to represent. But I mean, come on, who's insane in the NFL? That's one
I'm
right
bad
now.
Bad with open-ended questions.
Well, see, that could be also dangerous, right? Because even the Pouncies, because some people might say Richie Incognito, but like
there you go, ding ding ding.
But like that might be a lawsuit.
How
like,
do you let Nuno kill us like this?
Like I would
yeah,
take
but I
someone
don't
like Miles Garrett.
The answer. I don't know that Richie's the answer. Richie is.
He'll start fighting you. Will five
That's
seconds
right.
in, he'll okay. all of a sudden start fighting
I
you.
I don't know. I think Richie is too unpredictable. He may switch sides in the middle of it. I'm not confident.
But has he ever interviewed anybody else on his team? He's always been pretty good.
Yeah, it'll be like Anchorman. All of a sudden, he's on the other side.
Not my choice. Good one.
What are you doing over there,
Richie?
I love that. That's great. I didn't think of that.
What are your other names? Give me your other names now.
I'll give you mine and see if y'all can top that. Okay, how about that? Okay. To be fair. Okay. Mine is not it came out of nowhere, was undrafted out of Army. It was a Villanueva, the left tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah,
he won the Bronze
too.
Star, was an Army Ranger, came down and to win the Bronze Star, dragged two of his fellow soldiers. How a guy cannot in any military not hit a guy 6'9", drag this guy all the way to safety without getting shot.
Yeah, he's a good one.
Yeah.
He's definitely a good one. You're indicting the enemy's accuracy because they couldn't hit a 6'9" guy? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just telling you, maybe, he's just that bad they didn't want to hit him.
Also, I'm taking Aaron Donald with me. See, when you start thinking about this, Aaron Donald
would be another one.
He can dodge knives.
He's on my list. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. You're making me side with Supreme Nuno. Come on. This is awful.
I know. I'm ashamed of myself, Jason. Nuno, I don't need you to do it, too. I'm mad.
Well, before we go, Nuno, do you want to ask?
What about Quentin Copels?
Do you want to ask
Jason
which
your
D?
Question, Nuno. Yeah, ask Jason Quentin your question.
Nelson. No,
ask Jason.
Jason's been great, and I'm not going to mess with Jason.
No, ask him your question, Nuno. Come on. Do it.
No.
Go ahead.
Do it, Nuno.
Well, go ahead. Go ahead.
All right, hold on. Which D is
it? Oh, you got the D? I was going to look that up. I swear to God, that doesn't even sound like something you should listen to on the radio.
Good.
Read it, Nuno.
Don't let Jason answer.
So this came from the Cambridge.
Where'd you get that from?
This came from like a Cambridge website. The British, whatever, snooty people.
What?
Which D is in northern England town snooty. On the banks of the River Skirt?
Okay, is this, what is it? Is it geography? Is it history?
Which D,
is it,
Jason? Which D? Just say which D now.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to The Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.